Welcome back, everyone. Today, we start a new book, The Mysterious Benedict Society by Trenton Lee Stewart. I'm going to dive right in because I'm super excited to read this one. Chapter 1, Pencils, Erasers, and Disqualification. In a city called Stonetown, near a port called Stonetown Harbor, a boy named Rainey Muldoon was preparing to take an important test. It was the second test of the day. The first had been in an office across town. After that one, he was told to come here, to the Monk Building on 3rd Street, and to bring nothing but a single pencil and a single rubber eraser, and to arrive no later than 1 o'clock. If he happened to be late, or bring two pencils, or forget his eraser, or in any other way deviate from the instructions, he would not be allowed to take the test. And that would be that. Rainey, who very much wanted to take it, was careful to follow the instructions. Curiously enough, these were the only ones given. He was not told how to get to the Monk Building, for example, and had found it necessary to ask directions to the nearest bus stop, acquire a schedule from a dishonest bus driver who tried to trick him into paying for it, and walk several blocks to catch the 3rd Street bus. Not that any of this was difficult for Rainey Muldoon. Although he was only 11 years old, he was quite used to figuring things out for himself. From somewhere across the city, a church bell struck the half hour, 12:30. He still had a while to wait. When he'd checked the doors of the Monk Building at noon, they were locked. So Rainey had bought a sandwich at a deli stand and sat down on this park bench to eat. A tall building in Stonetown's busiest district must surely have many offices inside, he thought. Locked doors at noon seemed a little peculiar. But then, what hadn't been peculiar about this whole affair? To begin with, there was the advertisement. A few days before, Rainey had been reading the newspaper over breakfast at the Stonetown Orphanage, sharing sections with his tutor, Miss Perumal. As Rainey had already completed all the textbooks on his own, even those for high school students, the orphanage director had assigned him a special tutor while the other children went to class. Miss Perumal didn't quite know what to do with Rainey, but she was intelligent and kind, and in their time together, they had grown fond of sharing the morning newspaper over breakfast and tea. The newspaper that morning had been filled with the usual headlines, several of them devoted to what was commonly called the emergency. Things had gotten desperately out of control, the headlines reported. The school systems, the budget, the pollution, the crime, the weather. Why, everything, in fact, was a complete mess. And citizens everywhere were clamoring for a dramatic improvement in government. Things must change now, was the slogan plastered on billboards all over the city. It was a very old slogan. And although Rainey rarely watched television, he knew the emergency was the main subject of the news programs every day, as it had been for years. Naturally, when Rainey and Miss Perumal first met, they had discussed the emergency at great length. Finding themselves quite in agreement about politics, however, they soon found such conversation boring and decided to drop the subject. In general, then, they talked about the other news stories, those that varied day to day, and afterward they amused themselves by reading the advertisements. Such was the case on that particular morning, when Rainey's life had so suddenly taken a turn. "Do you care for more honey with your tea?" Miss Perumal had asked, speaking in Tamil, a language she was teaching him. But before Rainey could answer that of course he wanted more honey, the advertisement caught Miss Perumal's eye, and she exclaimed, "Rainey, look at this! Would you be interested?" Miss Perumal sat across the table from him, but Rainey, who had no trouble reading upside down, quickly scanned the advertisement's bold printed words, Are you a gifted child looking for special opportunities? How odd, he thought. The question was addressed directly to children, not to their parents. Rainey had never known his parents, who died when he was an infant, and it pleased him to read a notice that seemed to take this possibility into account. But still, how odd. How many children read the newspaper, after all? Rainey did, but he had always been alone in this, had always been considered an oddball. If not for Miss Perumal, he might even have given it up by now, to avoid some of the teasing. I suppose I might be interested, he said to Miss Perumal, if you think I would qualify. Miss Perumal gave him a wry look. Don't you play games with me, Rainey Muldoon. If you aren't the most talented child I've ever known, then I've never known a child at all. There were to be several sessions of the test administered over the weekend. They made plans for Rainey to attend the very first session. Unfortunately, on Saturday, Miss Perumal's mother fell ill, and Miss Perumal couldn't take him. This was a real disappointment to Rainey, and not just because of the delay. He always looked forward to Miss Perumal's company. Her laughter, her wry expressions, the stories she told, often in Tamil, of her childhood in India, even the occasional sighs she made when she didn't think he was aware. They were gentle and lilting, these sighs, and despite their melancholy, Rainey loved to hear them. Miss Perumal sighed when she was feeling sad for him, he knew. Sad to see him teased by the other children. Sad the poor boy had lost his parents. And Rainey wished he hadn't worried her, but he did like knowing she cared. She was the only one who did, not counting Seymour, the orphanage cat, with whom Rainey spent the day in the reading room. And he only wanted to be petted. Quite apart from his eagerness to take the special test, Rainey simply missed Miss Perumal. He was hopeful then when Mr. Rucker, the orphanage director, informed him late that evening that Miss Perumal's mother was considerably improved. Rainey was in the reading room again, the only place in the orphanage where he could be assured of solitude. No one ever ventured into it. And freedom from persecution. At dinner, an older boy named Vic Morgaroff had tormented Rainey for using the word enjoyable to describe the book he was reading. Vic thought it too fancy a word to be proper, and soon had gotten the entire table laughing and saying, "Enjoyable!" in mocking tones, until Rainey had finally excused himself without dessert and retreated here. "Yes, she's much better, much better," said Mr. Rucker, through a mouthful of cheesecake. He was a thin man with a thin face, and his cheeks positively bulged as he chewed. "Miss Perumal just telephoned with the news. She asked for you, but as you were not to be found in the dining hall, and I was in the middle of dinner, I took the message for you."
"Thank you," said Rainey, with a mixture of relief and disappointment. Cheesecake was his favorite dessert.
"I'm glad to hear it."
"Indeed. Nothing like health. Absolutely nothing like it. Best thing for anyone," said Mr. Rucker.
But here he paused in his chewing, with an unpleasant, worried expression upon his face, as if he thought perhaps there had been an insect in his food. Finally he swallowed, brushed the crumbs from his waistcoat, and said,
"But see here, Rainey, Miss Perumal mentioned a test of some sort. Special opportunities, she said. What is this all about? This isn't about attending an advanced school, is it?"
They had been through this before. Rainey had repeatedly asked permission to apply elsewhere, but Mr. Rucker had insisted Rainey would fare better here, with a tutor, than at an advanced school.
"Here, you are comfortable,"
Mr. Rucker had told him more than once. And more than once, Rainey had thought, "Here, I'm alone." But in the end, Mr. Rucker had his way, and Miss Perumal was hired. It had proved a blessing. Rainey would never complain about Miss Perumal. Still, he had often wondered what life might have been like at a school where the other students didn't find him so odd.
I don't know, sir, Rainey said, his hopefulness slipping into dejection. He wished Miss Perumal hadn't mentioned the test, though, of course, she must have felt obliged to. We just wanted to see what it was about. Mr. Rucker considered this.
Well, no harm in seeing what things are about, I suppose. I should like to know what it's about myself. In fact, why don't you prepare a report for me when you return? Say, 10 pages? No hurry. You can turn it in tomorrow evening.
Tomorrow evening? Said Rainey. Does that mean I'm taking the test?
I thought I told you, said Mr. Rucker with a frown. Miss Perumal will come for you first thing in the morning.
He took out an embroidered handkerchief and blew his nose with great ferocity.
And now, Rainey, I believe I'll leave you to your reading. This dusty room is a hardship on my sinuses. Be a good man and run a feather duster over the shelves before you leave, will you?
After hearing this news, Rainey could hardly return to his reading. He flailed about with the feather duster and went straight to bed, as if doing so would hasten the morning's arrival. Instead, it lengthened his night, for he was far too eager and anxious to sleep. Special opportunities, he kept thinking over and over again. He would have been thrilled to get a crack at plain old regular opportunities, much less special ones. Just before dawn, he rose quietly, got ready with the lights off so as not to disturb his roommates. They often snarled at him for reading in bed at night, even when he used a tiny pen light under the covers. And he hurried down to the kitchen. Miss Perumal was already waiting for him. She had been too excited to sleep as well and had arrived early. The kettle was just beginning to whistle on the stove, and Miss Perumal, with her back to him, was setting out cups and saucers.
"Good morning, Miss Perumal," he said froggily. He cleared his throat. "I was glad to hear your mother's doing better."
"Thank you, Rainey. Would you?" Miss Perumal turned then, took one look at him, and said, "You'll not make a good impression dressed like that, I'm afraid. One mustn't wear striped pants with a checkered shirt, Rainey. In fact, I believe those must belong to a roommate. They're at least a size too big. Also, it appears that one of your socks is blue and the other purple."
Rainey looked down at his outfit in surprise. Usually, he was the least noticeable of boys. He was of average size, of an average pale complexion. His brown hair was of average length, and he wore average clothes. This morning, though, he would stand out in a crowd, unless it happened to be a crowd of clowns. He grinned at Miss Perumal and said, "I dress this way for luck."
"Luckily, you won't need luck," said Miss Perumal, taking the kettle from the stove. "Now please go change, and this time turn on your light. Never mind how your roommates grumble, so that you may have better luck choosing your clothes."
When Rainey returned, Miss Perumal told him that she had a long errand to run. Her mother had been prescribed new medicine and a special diet, and Miss Perumal must go shopping for her. So it was agreed that she would take him to the test and pick him up when it was over. After a light breakfast, neither of them wanted more than toast, yet well before anyone else in the orphanage had risen, Miss Perumal drove him across the sleepy city to an office building near Stone Town Bay. A line of children already stood at the door, all of them accompanied by their parents, all fidgeting nervously. When Miss Perumal moved to get out of the car, Rainey said, "I thought you were dropping me off."
"You don't think I would just leave you here without investigating first, do you?" replied Miss Perumal. "The notice didn't even list a telephone number for questions. It's a bit out of the ordinary, don't you think?"
So Rainey took his place at the end of the line, while Miss Perumal went inside the building to speak with someone. It was a long line, and Rainey wondered how many special opportunities were available. Perhaps only a very few. Perhaps they would all be given out before he even reached the door. He was growing anxious at this idea when a friendly man ahead of him turned and said,
"Don't worry, son. You haven't long to wait. All the children are to go inside together in a few minutes. They made the announcement just before you arrived.
Rainey thanked him gratefully, noticing as he did so that a number of parents were casting grumpy looks at the man, apparently disliking the notion of being friendly to competitors. The man, embarrassed, turned away from Rainey and said nothing else.
Very well, said Miss Perumal when she returned. Everything is set. You may call me on their telephone when you've finished the test. Here is the number. If I'm not back by then, simply call a taxi and Mr. Rutger will pay the fare. You can tell me all about it this afternoon.
Thanks so much for everything, Miss Perumal, said Rainey, earnestly taking her hand.
Oh, Rainey, you silly child, don't look so grateful, said Miss Perumal.
To Rainey's surprise, there were tears on her cheeks.
It's nothing at all. Now give your poor tutor a hug. I imagine my services won't be needed after this.
I haven't passed it yet, Miss Perumal.
Oh, stop being silly, she said.
And after squeezing him tightly, Miss Perumal dabbed her eyes with a handkerchief, walked determinedly to her car, and drove away just as the children were ushered into the building. It was a curious test. The first section was rather what Rainey would have expected. One or two questions regarding octagons and hexagons, another devoted to bushels of this and kilograms of that, and another that required calculating how much time must pass before two speeding trains collided. This last question, Rainey answered with a thoughtful frown, noting in the margin that since the two trains were approaching each other on an empty stretch of track, it was likely the engineers would recognize the impending disaster and apply their brakes, thus avoiding the collision altogether. Rainey raced through these questions, and many liked them, then came to the second section, whose first question was, "Do you like to watch television?" This certainly was not the sort of question Rainey had expected. It was only a question of preference. Anyway, of course he liked to watch television. Everybody liked to watch television. As he started to mark down the answer, however, Rainey hesitated. Well, did he really? The more he thought about it, the more he realized that he didn't, in fact, like to watch television at all. I really am an oddball, he thought, with a feeling of disappointment. Nonetheless, he answered the question truthfully. No. The next question read, "Do you like to listen to the radio?" And again, Rainey realized that he did not, although he was sure everyone else did. With a growing sense of isolation, he answered the question, "No." The third question, thankfully, was less emotional. It read, "What is wrong with this statement?" How funny, Rainey thought, and marking down his answer, he felt somewhat cheered. "It isn't a statement at all," he wrote. "It's a question." The next page showed a picture of a chessboard, upon which all the pieces and pawns rested in their starting positions, except for a black pawn, which had advanced two spaces. The question read, "According to the rules of chess, is this position possible?" Rainey studied the board a moment, scratched his head, and wrote down his answer. Yes. After a few more pages of questions, all of which Rainey felt confident he had answered correctly, he arrived at the test's final question. "Are you brave?" Just reading the words quickened Rainey's heart. Was he brave? Bravery had never been required of him, so how could he tell? Miss Perumal would say he was. She would point out how cheerful he tried to be, despite feeling lonely, how patiently he withstood the teasing of other children, and how he was always eager for a challenge. But these things only showed that he was a good-natured, polite, and very often bored boy. Did they really show that he was brave? He didn't think so. Finally, he gave up trying to decide and simply wrote, "I hope so." He laid down his pencil and looked around. Most of the other children were also finishing the test. At the front of the room, munching rather loudly on an apple, the test administrator was keeping a close eye on them to ensure they didn't cheat. She was a thin woman in a mustard yellow suit,
with a yellowish complexion, short-cropped, rusty red hair, and a stiff posture. She reminded Rainey of a giant walking pencil.
"Pencils!"
the woman suddenly called out, as if she'd read his thoughts. The children jumped in their seats.
"Please lay down your pencils now," the woman said. "The test is over."
"But I'm not finished," one child cried. "That's not fair."
"I want more time," cried another.
The woman's eyes narrowed.
"I'm sorry you haven't finished, children, but the test is over. Please pass your papers to the front of the room and remain seated while the tests are graded. Don't worry, it won't take long."
As the papers were passed forward, Rainey heard the boy behind him snicker and say to his neighbor,
"If they couldn't finish that test, they shouldn't even have come. Like that chess question. Who could have missed it?"
The neighbor, sounding every bit as smug, replied, "They were trying to trick us. Pawns can only move one space at a time. So of course the position wasn't possible. I'll bet some stupid kids didn't know that."
"Ha! You're just lucky you didn't miss it yourself. Pawns can move two spaces. On their very first move, they can. But whether it moved one space or two is beside the point. Don't you know that white always moves first? The black pawn couldn't have moved yet at all. It's so simple. This test was for babies."
"Are you calling me a baby?" growled the other.
"You boys there," snapped the pencil woman. "Stop talking."
Rainey was suddenly anxious. Could he possibly have answered that question wrong? And what about the other questions? Except for the odd ones about television and bravery, they had seemed easy, but perhaps he was such a strange bird that he had misunderstood everything. He shook his head and tried not to care. If he wanted to prove himself brave, after all, he had better just stop worrying. If he must return to his old routine at the orphanage, at least he had Mrs. Perumal. What did it matter if he was different from the other children? Everyone got teased from time to time. He was no different in that respect. Rainey told himself this, but his anxious feeling didn't fade. After all the tests had been turned in, the pencil woman stepped out of the room, leaving the children to bite their nails and watch the clock. Only a few minutes passed, however, before she returned and announced,
"I shall now read the names of children admitted into the second phase of the test."
The children began to murmur. A second phase? The advertisement hadn't mentioned a second phase. The woman continued,
"If your name is called, you are to report to the Monk Building on 3rd Street, no later than 1 o'clock, where you will join children from other sessions who also pass the test."
She went on to lay out the rules about pencils, erasers, and disqualification. Then she popped a handful of peanuts into her mouth and chewed ferociously, as if she were starving. Rainey raised his hand.
Yes,
the woman said, swallowing.
"Excuse me, you say to bring only one pencil, but what if the pencil lead breaks? Will there be a pencil sharpener?"
Again, the boy behind Rainey snickered, this time muttering,
"What makes him so sure he'll be taking that test? She hasn't even called the names yet."
It was true. He should have waited until she'd called the names. He must have seemed very arrogant. Cheeks burning, Rainey ducked his head. The pencil woman answered,
"Yes, if a sharpener should become necessary, one will be provided. Children are not to bring their own. Understood?"
There was a general nodding of heads, after which the woman clapped the peanut grit from her hands, took out a sheet of paper, and continued.
"Very well. If there are no other questions, I shall read the list."
The room became very quiet.
"Reynard Muldoon," the woman called.
Rainey's heart leaped. There was a grumble of discontent from the seat behind him, but as soon as it passed, the room again grew quiet, and the children waited with bated breath for the other names to be called. The woman glanced up from the sheet.
"That is all,"
she said matter-of-factly, folding the paper and tucking it away.
"The rest of you are dismissed."
The room erupted in outcries of anger and dismay. "Dismissed?" said the boy behind Rainey. "Dismissed?" As the children filed out the door, some weeping bitterly, some stunned, some whining in complaint, Rainey approached the woman. For some reason, she was hurrying around the room, checking the window locks. "Excuse me, miss. May I please use your telephone? My tutor said..." "I'm sorry, Reynard," the woman interrupted, tugging unsuccessfully on a closed window. "I'm afraid there isn't a telephone." "But Miss Perumal..." "Reynard," the woman said with a smile, "I'm sure you can make do without one, can't you? Now, if you'll excuse me, I must sneak out the back door. These windows appear to have been painted shut."
"Sneak out? But why?"
"I've learned from experience. Any moment now, some of these children's parents will come storming in to demand explanations. Unfortunately, I have none to give them. Therefore, off I go. I'll see you this afternoon. Don't be late." And with that, away she went. It had been a strange business indeed, and Rainey had a suspicion it was to grow stranger still. When the distant church bell struck the quarter hour, Rainey finished his sandwich and rose from the park bench. If the doors to the Monk Building weren't open by now, he would try to find another way in. At this point, it would hardly surprise him to discover he must enter the building through a basement window. As he mounted the steps to the Monk Building's broad front plaza, Rainey saw two girls well ahead of him, walking together toward the front doors. "Other test takers," he guessed. One girl, who seemed to have green hair, though perhaps this was a trick of the light, the sun shone blindingly bright today, was carelessly flinging her pencil up into the air and catching it again. Not the best idea, Rainey thought. And sure enough, even as he thought it, the girl missed the pencil and watched it fall through a grate at her feet. For a moment, the other girl hesitated, as if she might try to help. Then she checked her watch. In only a few minutes, it would be 1 o'clock. "Sorry about your pencil. It's a shame," she said, but already her sympathetic expression was fading. Clearly, it had occurred to her that with the green-haired girl unable to take the test, there would be less competition. With a spreading smile, she hurried across the plaza and through the front doors of the Monk Building, which had finally been unlocked. The metal grate covered a storm grain that ran beneath the plaza, and the unfortunate girl was staring through it, down into darkness, when Rainey reached her. Her appearance was striking, indeed, even startling. She had coal black skin, hair so long she could have tied it around her waist, and yes, it truly was green, and an extraordinarily puffy white dress that gave you the impression she was standing in a cloud. "That's rotten luck," Rainey said, "to drop your pencil here, of all places." The girl looked up at him with hopeful eyes. "You don't happen to have an extra one, do you?" "I'm sorry, I was told to bring..." I know, she interrupted. "Only one pencil." "Well, that was my only pencil, and a fat lot of good it will do me down in that drain." She stared wistfully through the grate a moment, then looked up at Rainey as if surprised to see him still standing there. "What are you waiting for? The test starts any minute." "I'm not going to leave you here without a pencil," Rainey said. "I was surprised your friend did." "Friend? Oh, that other girl? She's not my friend. We just met at the bottom of the steps. I didn't even know her name. For that matter, I don't know yours either." "Reynard Muldoon. You can call me Rainey." "Okay, Rainey. Nice to meet you. I'm Rhonda Kazembe. So now that we're friends and all that, how do you intend to get my pencil back? We'd better hurry, you know. 1 minute late and we're disqualified." Rainey took out his own pencil, a new yellow number 2 that he'd sharpened to a fine point that morning. "Actually," he said, "we'll just share this one." He snapped the pencil in two and handed her the sharpened end. "I'll sharpen my half and we'll both be set. Do you have your eraser?" Rhonda Kazembe was staring at her half of the pencil with a mixture of gratitude and surprise. "That would never have occurred to me," she said, breaking it like that. "Now, what did you say?" "Oh, yes, I have my eraser."
"Then let's get going. We only have a minute," Rainey urged.
Rhonda held back. "Hold on, Rainey. I haven't properly thanked you."
"You're welcome," he said impatiently. "Now let's go."
Still, she resisted. "No, I really want to thank you. If it weren't for you, I couldn't have taken this test. And do you want to know something?" Glancing around to be sure they were alone, Rhonda whispered, "I have the answers. I'm going to make a perfect score."
"What? How?"
"No time to explain. But if you sit right behind me, you can look over my shoulder. I'll hold up my test a bit to make it easier."
Rainey was stunned. How in the world could this girl have gotten her hands on the answers? And now she was offering to help him cheat?
He was briefly tempted. He wanted desperately to learn about those special opportunities. But when he imagined returning to tell Miss Perumal of his success, hiding the fact that he cheated, he knew he could never do it.
"No, thank you," he said. "I'd rather not."
Rhonda Kazembe looked amazed, and Rainey once again felt the weight of loneliness upon him. If it was unpleasant to feel so different from the other children at Stonetown Orphanage, how much worse was it to be seen as an oddball by a green-haired girl wearing her own personal fog bank?
"Okay, suit yourself," Rhonda said,
as the two of them started for the front doors.
"I hope you know what you're in for."
Rainey was in too much of a hurry to respond. He had no idea what he was in for, of course, but he certainly wanted to find out. Inside the Monk building, conspicuously posted signs led them down a series of corridors, past a room where a handful of parents waited anxiously, and at last into a room crowded with children in desks. Except for the unusual silence, the room was just like any schoolroom, with a chalkboard at the front and a teacher's desk, upon which rested a pencil sharpener, a ruler, and a sign that said, "No talking. If you are caught talking, it will be assumed you are cheating." Only two seats remained empty, one behind the other. To guarantee he wouldn't be tempted to cheat, Rainey chose the one in front. A clock on the wall struck one, just as Rhonda Kazembe dropped into the desk behind him.
"That was close," she said. "There will be no talking," boomed the pencil woman, who just entered them, slamming the door behind her.
She strode briskly to the front of the room, carrying a tall stack of papers and a jar of pickles.
"If any child is caught cheating, then he or she will be executed."
The children gasped.
I'm sorry, did I say executed? I meant to say escorted. Any child caught cheating will be escorted from the building at once. Now then, are you all relaxed? It's important to be relaxed when taking such an extremely difficult test as this, especially considering how long it is and how very little time you'll have to complete it."
In the back of the room, someone groaned in distress.
"You there!"
shouted the pencil woman, pointing her finger. Every head in the room swiveled to see who had groaned. It was the same girl who had abandoned Rhonda Kazembe on the plaza. Under the savage stare of the pencil woman, the girl's face went pasty pale, like the underbelly of a dead fish.
"I said no talking," the woman barked. "Do you wish to leave now?"
"But I only groaned," the girl protested. The pencil woman frowned.
"Do you mean to suggest that saying, 'But I only groaned,' doesn't count as talking?"
The girl, frightened and perplexed, could hardly muster a shake of the head.
"Very well. Let this be a warning to you, to all of you. From this moment on, there will be no talking, period. Now then, are there any questions?"
Rainey raised his hand.
"Reynard Muldoon, you have a question?"
Rainey held up his broken pencil and made a pencil sharpening motion with the other hand.
Very well. You may use the pencil sharpener on my desk.
Rainey hustled forward, sharpened his pencil. He felt all eyes upon him as he ground away, checked the tip, and ground away again, and hurried back to his seat. As he did so, he noticed Rhonda Kazembe slipping a tiny piece of paper from the sleeve of her cloud dress, the list of test answers. She was taking quite a risk, Rainey thought, but he had no chance to reflect on it further, as the pencil woman now launched into the rest of her speech.
You shall have 1 hour to complete this test, she barked, and you must follow these directions exactly. First, write your name at the top of the test. Second, read all the questions and answers carefully. Third, choose the correct answers by circling the appropriate letter. Fifth, bring the completed test to me. Sixth, return to your seat and wait until all the tests have been graded, at which time I will announce the names of those who pass.
The children were shifting uneasily in their seats. What had happened to the fourth step? The pencil woman had skipped from third to fifth. The children looked at one another, not daring to speak. What if the fourth step was important? Rainey was waiting, hoping someone else would raise a hand for a change. When no one did, he timidly raised his own.
Yes, Reynard.
He pointed to his mouth.
Yes, you may speak. What is your question?
Excuse me, but what about the fourth step?
There is no fourth step, she replied. Any other questions?
Utterly baffled now, the children held their tongues.
To pass this test, the pencil woman went on, you must correctly answer every question, by which I mean every question. If you skip even one question or answer one incorrectly, you will fail the test.
No problem, whispered Rhonda Kazembe from behind Rainey. The pencil woman's eyes darted to their side of the room. She stared hard at Rainey, whose mouth went dry. Why on earth didn't Rhonda keep her mouth closed? Was she trying to get them thrown out?
You may begin the test as soon as you receive it, said the pencil woman, turning away at last,
and Rainey resisted the urge to sigh with relief. Even a sigh might disqualify him. Besides, what relief he felt didn't last long. The pencil woman had begun handing out the tests. The first child to receive one was a tough-looking boy in a baseball cap who eagerly grabbed it, looked at the first question, and burst into tears. The girl behind him looked at her test, rubbed her eyes as if they weren't working properly, then looked again. Her head wobbled on her neck.
If you begin to feel faint, said the pencil woman, moving on to the next child, place your head between your knees and take deep breaths. If you think you may vomit, please come to the front of the room where a trash can will be provided.
Down the row she went, distributing the tests. The crying boy had begun flipping through the tests now. There appeared to be several pages. And with each new page, his sobs grew louder and more desperate. When he reached the end, he began to wail.
"I'm afraid loud weeping isn't permitted," said the pencil woman. "Please leave the room."
The boy, greatly relieved, leaped from his desk and raced to the door, followed at once by two other children who hadn't received the test yet but were terrified now to see it. The pencil woman closed the door.
"If any others flee the room in panic or dismay," she said sternly, "please remember to close the door behind you. Your sobs may disturb the other test takers."
She continued handing out the test. Child after child received it with trembling fingers, and child after child, upon looking at the questions, turned pale or red or a subtle shade of green. By the time the pencil woman dropped the pages upon his desk, dread was making Rainey's stomach flop like a fish, and for good reason. The questions were impossible. The very first one read,
the territories of the Naxivan Autonomous Republic of the Nagorno-Karabakh region are disputed by what two countries? A. Bhutan, which, under the 1865 Treaty of Sinchulu, ceded borderland to Britain, and Britain, which in exchange for that land provided Bhutan an annual subsidy, and under whose influence Bhutan's monarchy was established in 1907. B. Azerbaijan, whose territory in 1828 was divided between Russia and Persia by the Treaty of Turkmenche, and Armenia, a nation founded after the destruction of the Seleucid Empire some 2,000 years ago, likewise incorporated into Russia by the aforementioned treaty. C. Vanuatu, which, having been administered, until its independence, by an Anglo-French condominium, retains both French and English as official languages, in addition to Bislama or Bichalama, and Portugal, whose explorer Pedro Fernandes de Quiros became, in 1606, the first European to discover the islands Vanuatu comprises. Although there were two more answers to choose from, Rainey didn't read them. If every question was like this one, he had absolutely no hope of passing. A quick glance at the next few questions did nothing to encourage him. If anything, they got worse. And this was only the first page. All around him, children were shivering, sighing, grinding their teeth. Rainey felt like joining them. So much for those special opportunities. Back to the orphanage he would go, where no one, not even good Miss Perumal, knew what to do with him. It had been a nice idea, but apparently he did not have what it took. Even so, he wasn't ready to leave. He had yet to follow the directions, and because he was determined not to quit until he had at least tried, he proceeded to follow them now. Dutifully, he wrote his name atop the first page. That was the first step. Well, you've accomplished that much, he thought. The second step was to read all the questions and answers carefully. Rainey took a deep breath. There were 40 questions in all. Just reading them would take him most of the hour. It didn't help that the pencil woman now sat eating pickles. They were especially crisp ones, too, as she watched the children struggle. The second question wanted to know where the common vetch originated and to what family it belonged. Rainey had no idea what a common vetch was, and the possible answers offered no helpful clue. It might be an antelope, a bird, a rodent, or a vine. Rainey went on to the third question, which had to do with subatomic particles called fermions, and an Indian physicist named Satyendranath Bose. The fourth question asked which church was built by the Emperor Justinian to demonstrate his superiority to the late Theodoric's Ostrogothic successors. On and on the questions went. To his credit, Rainey recognized the names of a few places, a few mathematic principles, and one or two important historical figures. But it wouldn't do him any good. He would be lucky to answer a single question correctly, much less all of them. When he was exactly halfway through the test, he was on question 20 regarding the difference between parataxis and hypotaxis. Rainey heard Rhonda Kazembe rise from the desk behind him. Was she already finished? Well, of course, she had all the answers. Rainey grimaced in irritation, and as Rhonda stepped forward to turn in her test, the other children gasped in amazement. But the pencil woman seemed not the least bit suspicious. If anything, she was absorbed in Rhonda's bizarre appearance and hardly glanced at the test as she took it. Rainey had a sudden insight. Rhonda was calling attention to herself on purpose. It was a trick. No one would suspect her of cheating, because who in her right mind would make such a spectacle of herself if she intended to cheat? The green hair, it must be a wig, the poofy dress, the whispering, they were all meant to distract. Most people would assume that if a child intended to cheat,
then surely she would call as little attention to herself as possible, would be as quiet as a mouse and as plain as wallpaper. Rainey had to hand it to Rhonda. She might not be smart enough to pass the test, but she was clever enough to get away with cheating on it. He felt a pang of jealousy. Now Rhonda would move on to experience those special opportunities, while Rainey would mope his way back to the orphanage, defeated. As Rhonda passed by him on the way to her desk, she winked and let fall a tiny slip of paper. It drifted down like a feather and settled lightly upon Rainey's desk. The test answers. Rainey peeked over at the pencil woman, but she hadn't noticed. She was busy grading Rhonda's test now, making checkmark after checkmark and nodding her head. So the answers were indeed the right ones. And here they sat on his desk. If he'd felt tempted before, when he'd had no idea how hard the test would be, that temptation was nothing compared to now. No matter that he'd resisted, no matter that he'd chosen the seat precisely to avoid the situation, here he was, staring at a slip of paper that contained the key to his hopes. All he had to do was turn it over and look at the answers. The other children were too busy sniffling and biting their fingernails to notice, and if he hurried, he might even copy the answers down before the pencil woman looked up again. She had finished grading Rhonda's paper and was concentrating on the nearly empty jar of pickles, trying to fish out the last one. Rainey stared a long moment at the paper, sorely tempted. Then he reached out and flicked it from his desk and onto the floor. What good would those opportunities do him if he wasn't qualified to be given them? And where was the pleasure in cheating? If he couldn't pass fairly, he didn't want to pass. He thought this, and mostly believed it, and felt his spirits boosted by the decision. But even so, a few seconds passed before he could tear his eyes from the paper on the floor. All right, he told himself, returning to the test. Get a move on, Rainey, and don't look back. There's no time to waste. Indeed, there wasn't, as a glance at the wall clock confirmed. Less than half an hour remained, and Rainey had more than half the test yet to read. He finished reading about parataxis and hypotaxis. They either had something to do with writing or else with futuristic transportation, but he couldn't decide which. And he moved on to question 21, which read, after the fall of the Russian Empire, when a failed attempt to create a Trans-Caucasian Republic with Georgia and Armenia led to the creation of the country Azerbaijan, which currently disputes with Armenia the territories of the Nakhchivan Autonomous Republic and the Nagorno-Karabakh region, from what key powers did Azerbaijan... Rainey stopped. Something about the question seemed awfully familiar. So familiar that he felt pressed to think about it. Hadn't he seen those names before? Flipping back to the beginning of the test, Rainey read the very first question again. The territories of the Nakhchivan Autonomous Republic and the Nagorno-Karabakh region are disputed by what two countries? He blinked, hardly believing his eyes. Armenia and Azerbaijan. The answer to question one lay hidden in question 21. This wasn't a test of knowledge at all. It was a puzzle. Rainey looked at question 22, which began, despite having originated in Europe, the vine, known as the common vetch, a member of the pea family, is widely, there it was, the answer to question two. With mounting excitement, Rainey read the next one, and sure enough, although the question itself made no mention of subatomic particles or Indian physicists, there was a long discussion of them in answer D. Not only were all the answers buried in the test, he realized, they were listed in order. Number one's answer was found in number 21, and vice versa. Number two's answer was found in number 22, and so on, all the way up to number 40, which cleared up the mystery of parataxis and hypotaxis
raised in question 20. Rainey was so delighted he nearly leaped from his desk and cheered. Still, he couldn't spare even a moment to congratulate himself. Time was running short. Eagerly, he set to the task of finding the correct answers. This took a good while, as it was necessary to flip back and forth between pages and read a great deal of text. And in the end, it took Rainey almost exactly 1 hour to finish the test. He had only just circled the last answer, placed his test on the pencil woman's desk, and looked around at the other children. Some were furiously circling numbers at random, hoping to get lucky, and some were not to be seen at all, having crept out of the room in bleak despair. When the pencil woman shouted, "Pencils! Time's up, children! Lay down your pencils, please!" After a certain amount of blubbering and wiping away tears, the children stacked their tests on top of Rainey's and returned to their seats. In exhausted silence, they waited as the pencil woman flipped through the tests. This took a minute. She had only to look at the first question, after all. When she came to Rainey's at the bottom of the stack, she ran through the pages, making check marks and nodding. "Nice work," Rhonda whispered from behind him. "You managed it on your own." She seemed genuinely pleased that he hadn't cheated, despite having encouraged him to do just that. She certainly was a strange one. "I shall now read the names of those who passed the test," announced the pencil woman. "If your name is called, you will advance to the third stage of testing. So please remain seated and await further instructions. Those whose names are not called are free to go." Rainey's ears perked up. There was a third stage? The pencil woman cleared her throat, but this time she didn't bother looking at the paper in front of her. "Reynard Muldoon," she called out. On her way out of the room, she added, "That is all."